I'm Amos, host of Undaunted, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Gentlemen, boys and girls, pets and creatures of every make and model, fans of entertainment, shenanigans alike. Welcome back to Legends Podcast. I'm Beef.
Wing.
And I'm John a Lobster. In 1991, Michael J. Fox, one of the biggest stars of the late 80s, was privately diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. He quickly signed a three-year, three-picture deal with Fox, including Life with Mikey, For Love or Money, and Greedy, all of which were panned by critics. Fox courageously disclosed his Parkinson's diagnosis in 1998 and revived his acting career with acclaimed roles on TV. But this trio of flops in the early 90s could easily have destroyed his career. At 32% on Rotten Tomatoes, the Barry Sonnenfeld directed For Love or Money stands as the best reviewed of the three, even if it was pulled from theaters after a mere 4 weeks. Let's check into the Bradbury and see how the film holds up.
Okay, so at least I chose the best out of that series. But
Greedy, by like 4 percentage points.
Okay. Greedy, is this the one where he works as a mailman in a company and he starts sleeping with the wife of the boss?
I don't know. I've never seen it. I know Life with Mikey is the one about the child star.
Yeah, so I think I've said Greedy, but here it's called, like, The Secret of My Success.
Oh, that's what it's also called here. That's a different movie.
Not the same movie at all.
Not the same movie. I was thinking that when you said it, but I don't know. Anyway, this is 1993's For Love or Money, which is directed by Barry Sonnenfeld, produced by Brian Grazer, starring Fox, Gabriel Anwar, Anthony Higgins, Bob Balaban, Foiva Schwinkel. Some good people. Yeah.
I love Anwar.
Gabriel Anwar.
I saw her in, like, was it Burn Notice and all the other stuff that she's been in. And I'd been probably about half hour, 40 minutes into this movie, and she, like, came around a corner, and there's some way that she, like, grinned or something, and I'm like, who is this chick? I know who this is. I don't know who this is, but so... I do love her.
All right, so this is Wing's pick. Wing, why?
Okay, this is going to be a weird... This is one of my weird comedy that actually... We have a concept here that we call like a Saturday afternoon movie. I guess it's the same thing for you guys. And this one and The Secret of My Success used to play back-to-back all the time. Like, all the time. And for some reason, I always loved the job this guy had. Because in French, the movie's called The Concierge. And I understood...
Which is a French word.
Yeah. Which made me understand for the first time that a concierge is not the person that will wash stuff, but it's actually the person that helps everybody in an hotel.
Connects everybody.
Exactly, knows everybody, is able to connect everybody to whatever they need.
Dude, the concierge, like, ticket and cash roulette.
I love that.
In the movie. So awesome, where they're trading high-class tickets for who needs what, and you just see them, and they're like, under the bridge in their high-class suits.
Donahue, how'd this get in here?
Right.
They all have the little pin on their lapel with the keys.
Yep.
But they're different for each hotel.
And he was constantly removing that every time he was leaving the zone that he wanted. You know, he didn't want to portray that.
Yep. So the 8 years old Wing, for some reason, that caught his imagination. And I was like, that's the job I want.
You wanted to be the concierge.
Yeah. I didn't want to be the owner of anything or all that. I just wanted to be the guy that everybody went to for advice and when they need something.
You know, drug dealers have a lot of that same feeling sometimes.
Yeah, probably. I mean, but look what happened with if we go back a couple of years with Gunna Geek and stuff like that, that's mostly what happened. I just put a bunch of people in contact together and that came up by itself. You know? So
you're the concierge of the Gunna Geek Network.
Not anymore. At the start, yes. So that's why I love that movie. Simple as that. And it's to see, like, that guy that eats, like, Chinese every day with has these millions of little sauce that he does. So for some reason, that just captivated my imagination. And when that came out on DVD, I'm probably one of the 8 person that actually bought that. I still have the disc. That's what I watched. So give you an idea. I know exactly what kind of movie it is, but the fact that this movie knows so well what kind of movie it is, I'm kind of okay with.
Yeah.
It's not the kind of movie that's going to make you laugh, but it's the kind of movie that's going to make you grin for an hour.
Yeah, so. I had a good feeling with it. What the line about knowing what kind of movie it is, I think, to contrast with Inner Space.
Hey.
And how Inner Space was kind of all over the place, genre-wise. This movie, it's very comfortable in that kind of John Hughes pocket of it's about people and a little bit of like different classes of people, but ultimately everyone kind of works together, and like the blue collar people get along with the rich people staying in the hotel, and everything all kind of works out. I mean, sure, you have like that one British snob guy, but other than that, everyone's pretty chill.
And the whole ending of the movie is predicated on the biggest deus ex machina of the whole thing, which is basically one old guy that keeps his job, mess everything up, and he sends the wrong information to the right guy so that guy can save the day. It's the cheapest way to write an ending in the world. But
oh, I thought it was great.
But it kind of worked, yeah.
They set it up so well.
I forgot about that at that point in time.
They establish how bumbling Feuwe Schwinkel is, and he's awesome. You guys have seen him in other stuff, right?
Yeah.
Picket Fences, Boston Public, no?
Maybe Boston Public, yeah.
So he's awesome as the elderly bellhop. You know, he's in the union, so they can't get rid of him. And I love the narration from the parrot as he's kind of bumbling around and dropping stuff. The parrot's like, oh, God. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, Jesus.
It's kind of the first time that I watched this movie in English, so I didn't know the lines. That was kind of funny.
Oh, okay.
The dubbing is kind of bad, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
But it's gonna sound weird, but it's kind of movie like that like has have a lot of nostalgia attached. I can't watch them in their original. It needs to be that same feeling than when I was young, even if the lips don't work at all, and you know it's kind of shaky a little bit. But yeah,
was it the weird random like hotel manager? Yeah, guten Morgen.
Mr. Himmelman, played by Udo Kier.
Sure.
He is another character actor who shows up in a lot of these types of roles. And it's I love that Michael J. Fox's character, Duck, kind of has one over on him because he knows about all his personal phone calls he makes
right
on the hotel account.
Well, he knows everything.
He seemed to be slow about everything.
Yeah.
Did you guys pick up on the Daft Punk beta helmets that rolled through on the bike?
Oh, God. Now that you're thinking about it, yes. But no, not at the time.
You saw them in two shots, coming and going. As soon as I saw them coming into the screen, I was like, what can I say about them Daft Punk helmets? So, yeah.
It's great.
You have to agree that the kind of special effect, quote unquote, that he has to show his hotel is kind of cool, but there's no way that guy bought that piece of land. There's no way. It's like in front of New York, that's prime real estate.
Yeah, but you're talking 25 years ago, 24 years ago.
Well, still millions of dollars.
Yeah, but you still might have got a short sale. You might have got this or that.
You're talking about the ruin of the smallpox hospital?
Yes.
So that's really there, and it's still a ruin. Because it was a smallpox hospital, and no one wants to buy it.
Haunted now.
Yeah, no one wants to buy it and turn it into anything.
But I mean, you can get shit like that for cheap. There's a very historical house here in Milwaukee that years ago sold for like $12,000.
Oh, literally, wow.
No money. They just had to spend, you know, the $20,000 or $40,000 that it would cost to at least update some of it, fix some of the brickwork and some of this or that. But still, they got it for nothing.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's
point taken.
Shit out there.
Point taken.
But I did like his little, I'm going to have an artist come and put a piece of glass here and paint windows on my hotel.
That was kind of fun.
That was kind of fun. It's a nice kind of magical moment that they're able to find in their love story. That's kind of, okay, she sleeps with the bus, but the bus doesn't care about her. So, you know, it's, again, it's kind of cardboard. It's, oh God, I can't believe I'm going to say that, but this movie's made by the characters.
Oh, God. There's a Michelle Pfeiffer whipped cream joke. I mean, come on.
There's an Ivanka Trump joke.
What?
Oh God.
Did I miss that?
Yeah. That's one of the earlier wives.
No way.
Yeah. She says something about Ivanka. At least Donald's not in it. I love the end of the movie. Not necessarily like the end, but when they're trying to meet up on the highway or on the bridge and they realize that they're on opposite sides of the bridge. I thought that was great. They're like, what? What did you say?
But they love each other.
That's true. That's all that counts.
That's all that counts. Who cares about all the rest of their life? They love each other.
The party in the Hamptons with the mistaken identity. Who's sleeping with who?
That was actually pretty good.
Yeah. My favorite part, though, are mostly in the hotel. I'll have to be honest.
Mine, too, you dirty bird. Oh, wait, what?
Thank you, Beef.
The hotel and...
Motel and the Holiday Inn?
Yeah, yeah. And, what's his name? Why is his name not in my credits? The fashion designer.
Oh, and what the fuck was up with that? I didn't even realize it was a designer up until, like, the fifth black and white picture.
Why am I blanking on his name? He's got a weird name.
I almost wrote it down.
Now I have to go to the IMDb page, and
his performance was a little bit shaky, but we don't see it yet. It's not like what is it? The other one, Frighteners.
Yeah, this was early on in the stages. Anyway, how do you want me to phrase this? Oh, and I love the fashion designer. Isaac Mizrahi. I thought he was hilarious.
Isaac Mizrahi?
Isaac Mizrahi.
Mizrahi. What else has he done?
Okay. Oh, he's done a ton of stuff. He's all over the place. You would also recognize him for being on Project Runway.
Okay. Sure.
And as an actor, you would have seen him in...
Frenchie McGee's all confused. Project who? Go on.
You would see him in things like, what else has he been in?
Yeah. Well, if we go with the Chekhov in this one, except the Chekhov watch box, I don't have a lot. I mean, Chekhov tickets exchange, because at the end he rips off everyone and he cash in on all his freaking favor for a ride across town, I guess.
The helicopter?
Yeah.
That
he cashed in
cool.
a lot of favor. By
How do you
him.
Know Chuck or whatever his name was? And he just...
Oh, I don't know. I know so-and-so who knows so-and-so who knows so-and-so
right,
who knows Chuck.
Like six people.
Oh, okay.
But you have to agree, you lived in this world for 30-some-odd years. That's how it works.
But then they dubbed him when he was jumping out going, thanks, Chuck. You just got over that wasn't Chuck, right? I mean...
I think that's the joke, that he doesn't care. It's Chuck. Thank you, Chuck.
Oh, okay.
Didn't say it's a good joke, Beef.
Oh, it's a joke, Wayne.
Yeah, exactly.
Other thoughts on For Love or Money? Again, it only spent 4 weeks in theaters, so it was not a hit.
And it's what, an hour and 15 minutes, an hour and 20 minutes?
Yeah, it's short enough.
An hour and 25, hour and 30, it's not.
It lived great. A good life. I feel like it lived a good life on cable when they could edit it, put some commercials in, make it a two-hour movie.
See, I almost wish I wouldn't have got the group me from you, Lobster, saying that it was actually really good. It knew what it was, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Because I went into it going, okay, this is at least going to be kind of fun. And then I found myself grinning the whole time. I probably would have anyways.
Well, what if I had said it sucked? Then you'd be like, oh,
I don't know.
Sucked.
Maybe then I never thought it sucked.
I didn't spoil anything. I was just like, all right, it wasn't that bad.
It's a fucking love story. It's a rom-com. I'm pretty sure he got the girl.
Yeah, no shit. No shit.
Shocker.
Funny thing that happened this week, though, after that we talk about Inner Space, somebody asked me about, like, just like this, like, a Meg Ryan movie sci-fi, and I was like, mm-hmm. Inner Space, of course. Never heard of it before, and now I was able to plug it somewhere.
It's on the tip of your tongue.
All right, now it's in the ether. Everybody can smell it on you.
Bader
remake off. Time. Let's remake Inner Space.
Oh, now they could. You'd be nano-sized and shit.
I tell you what, I don't think you could remake this movie because so much of it is analog.
Oh yeah,
so much of it wouldn't work with cell phones and stuff.
Yeah, but the one corded cell phone they show in the beginning to show that he's a boss.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. Yeah, I watched Little Weapon again, and when I see that cell phone, I think of the first one, where it's attached to a car battery or something.
Oh, yeah, my mom, my dad had the bag phone, and my dad had the bag phone, and my mom had the bag phone. My mom's boyfriend had the frickin', like, attached one in his car. So I've seen the whole genesis of cell phones. They were stupid back in the day.
You didn't even want to carry them. Yeah, the car phone. You are going from your own phone to your car phone to your business phone. It's... Come on.
Dumb.
Lame. Okay, are you ready to rate this one, guy?
I think we can put this one to bed.
Let's do it.
So, Wing, for love or money, are you going legendary?
I'm taking money.
Are you going legendary?
Hotel Legendarium.
Legend of its time.
Gratuitous goodness.
Cult legend.
A concierge.
Awesome.
$50 handshake.
Entertaining.
At least Donald Trump isn't in it.
Mayable.
Roach Motel.
Forgettable.
I checked out.
Abysmal.
Marty McFlop.
Spring Breakers Highlander.
Hotel for Dogs.
With a side of nostalgia, guilty pleasure, tingle, barf, tears.
90s campy love comedies.
And that is why I never look at the notes before the show, because I think these being read to me is always a highlight of the evening. Okay, I'm going to go with at least Donald Trump isn't in it. I'm aware that this is not a great movie, but the side of 90s campy love and, you know, early teenage year afternoon movies make this something fun. Would I ever think about that if it was not like ingrained in me and watch it multiple times when I was young? Probably not. I would never have a second thought for this movie. But you know what? If you're sick in afternoon, watch that. It's going to be entertaining as hell. If you have something better to do, well, maybe you should do something better. But at least you're going to have a good time. Beef?
I kind of think I got to follow you.
Oh.
At least Donald Trump isn't in it. I had more fun that I thought I would. I will add with the side of 90s campy love comedies, because while I'm not a big fan of rom-coms, this was solidly late 80s, early 90s. Dude's going to get the girl. You know it's going to happen. You know pretty much how it's going to happen. It's just insert different douchebags in the story. So it was fun.
Oh, I'm going to go a step up and give it the $50 handshake.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I think it needs to be at least 3 or 4 steps above Inner Space. So I had a good time with it. I would have given it a tip, meaning, I guess, a recommendation to someone else. If you're going to watch a Michael J. Fox from this time period, this is probably the one to go for. The other one I have fond memories of is Doc Hollywood, kind of the same way, seeing it on TV. So I would rate this an awesome.
Remember that as a movie? What the fuck are you talking about?
I have that on DVD as well, because it was a double pack.
He's like a Hollywood plastic surgeon doctor, and he ends up in a small town being like a family doctor.
he fall in love with the town and decide to move there.
It's basically when they used to put Hallmark movies in theaters.
Oh, okay. So that's cool.
It's actually pretty fun. We should watch that.
Last word on For Love or Money, fellas.
Tip.
Dan Hedaya's body hair. And I mean, my God, he's wearing a sweater at all times.
He is.
He never has a shirt on, and yet he always has a shirt on.
Gabriel Anwar's nose.
Ooh.
Ooh. Nose.
Good nose. What time is that?
News time.
What a transition. You're a master, sir.
Well done. So we talked a little bit recently about how the box office has really been stagnant.
Holy fuck.
Yeah.
And it turns out that
it does turn out
people want to see movies. People want to spend money going to the movies.
Holy shit.
They just want it to be good movies.
They just want to see it.
Fuck. They just want to see it.
But were you following that during the weekend? Because the first estimate was around 48, 45. Then they readjust to 70. Then they readjust to 90. Then they readjust to under 3. And the actual number is, 123? That's nuts.
123.4 plus million dollars in a weekend.
Keep that in mind. There's 5% of theater that were closed because of a storm somewhere. Sure. Like, I think it's Irma or...
Holy fuck! I didn't even see that.
Like, yep.
I heard the movie was really good. Phenomenally good, actually. It touches on the book more. It touches on everybody's love for the miniseries or whatever came out years ago. And I heard it was making a shit ton of money. But I...
Yeah, that shit ton of money.
In an opening weekend. And then I read it made the most money for a horror movie ever on opening weekend. And then, what the fuck? Who's made more money this on any opening weekend?
Yeah. Just kind of for comparison, comparing this weekend at the theaters to last weekend at the theaters. And again, last weekend was a 4-day weekend. So it was a 4-day compared to a 3-day. Yeah. This weekend is 191% increase.
I didn't make the research, but I'm going to do it. I'm kind of curious to see, like, versus the other years, because September is usually a dumping ground.
Yeah. late August, September, no one expects great things.
It's the first opening weekend, or the biggest opening September weekend, widest rated R opening ever.
Yeah. Almost the biggest rated R. It didn't quite beat Deadpool.
But see what they're finding right now? They're finding that the kid that were going to theater and we were young that were sneaking into R movies.
No, we didn't have
now pay for them.
We didn't have to sneak. We were let in still when R was like, yeah, come on in.
Okay, that was more difficult than Canada. But point is that now we're the paying audience. So they're realizing that now.
I'm scared to go see that.
Here's what's kind of cool. If you compare the previous September opening weekend holders, Hotel Transylvania 2 and Gravity, if you combine what they made, it doesn't even come close to it.
Wow.
Wait, say that again?
Hotel Transylvania made $48.5 million. Gravity made $55.7 million. You add those together, still $10 million short of it.
The news has been crazy right now with it pun kind of replacing word. It's weird.
I really should see this. We should see it before.
We should see it at some point.
Okay. Yeah, we should see it.
That's Halloween. I'm just saying.
Sure.
Yeah.
You'll float too.
You'll float.
I forgot about that. Oh my God. I don't want to see it anymore. No more.
Okay, so are you guys ready for the Star Wars news segment? Because that's
basically it. So last week we talked about how Colin Trevorrow was out. We speculated as to why and who might replace him. And we said, you know who's not going to replace him? Right, definitely not going to be J.J. Abrams.
No, I think if you listen to the tape, which we just put out, I said something like, well, it could be, though. He has taken the helm to what's-a-name, I think was my exact quote, meaning the last big property, Star Trek.
Star Trek, he did Mission Impossible 3.
Right.
And also, but one still thing about...
it was a billion to one.
Yeah, one thing we know about J.J. Abrams is... if you back up the dump trucks full of cash,
beep,
he will
beep,
he will
beep, 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 beep.
When that phone rings, he will generally answer.
Yeah, he has a red phone, and that red phone means 5 million and up. Yeah. You know,
yeah. that red phone means 5 million a day.
Yeah.
But still, okay. Pro and con. Pros, he made The Force Awakens pretty good. Yeah. Cons, he's pretty good at setting up crap. Yeah. Not really good at closing it up.
He did Avengers. He did, I mean, there's other stuff that were at least...
He didn't do Avengers.
Wait, who did Avengers?
His film credits right now are Mission Impossible 3.
Okay.
Star Trek, 2009. Cloverfield, okay. Star Trek Into Darkness.
Okay.
And The Force Awakens, right?
Am I right? Yeah, he doesn't have lots of credit. He produced a lot of stuff. He
what the hell I'm thinking about?
Joss Whedon?
Ah, fuck, you're probably right.
But yeah, so that's where I'm kind of concerned a little bit. Because Episode 7 was written with Lawrence Kasdan.
Yeah.
This one's going to be written with Chris Terrio. Chris Terrio is a great writer, but I don't know if he's a Star Wars fan at all. I know he was a big DC fan, and we saw what I can't wait to see Justice League, actually, to see what that come out. But it's not Dawn of Justice. That show's great. But he won an Oscar for Argo. Yeah. So,
what's interesting is I don't think Kathleen Kennedy is letting much control go. It's funny, I was looking today at the list of the people that were announced to direct Star Wars movies and how many of them have actually made Star Wars movies.
Right.
So J.J. Abrams, Josh Trank, Gareth Edwards, Rian Johnson, Colin Trevorrow, Phil Lord, and Chris Miller.
Seven.
Yeah. So out of those people... two have actually made.
So that's their five movies. Dead in the water, maybe one or two more are actually still working on it.
To be fair, Gareth Edwards played ball, and that still is Rogue One that got out.
Is it, or is it Gilroy's?
Well, at least he played.
I mean, the ending changed, the beginning changed, the middle stuff changed.
You can say what you want. You and me didn't like that movie. We agree with that.
But
most people like that movie. It made money, and even if the production was kind of iffy, it was not dramatic Han Solo. Han Solo makes no sense.
What you call it is like Alien Covenant, right? First time I saw it, I felt disappointed and slightly saddened. But the more I watched it, the
couple times,
it gets better. Rogue One is like that for me. Like, I was like, wait, I don't, what?
Nope.
And then I watched it a couple more times, and I'm like, okay, I kind of,
yeah,
I like the universe, obviously, but it made it more accessible for a fan like me who doesn't give a shit about the universe.
Rogue One has one good scene, and it's the last 2 minutes.
Wow,
the hallway fight.
Yeah, the hallway fight is one of the best Star Wars scene.
Oh, I thought you just meant them all getting blown up.
No, actually, I don't really care.
When they all die, that's the best part. Yes. And it is. Well, it truly is.
What is this, though, with Trevorrow? What was his big thing about why he isn't directing?
So far, people have been surprisingly tight-lipped. I guess no one really wants to come out and say that Colin Trevorrow basically assholed his way out of a job. So
I have been known to do that.
The one thing that I've seen, which is kind of interesting, is somebody said that the thing about Colin Trevorrow is he's really, really, really confident I guess you could call it that.
Wow, that's a lot better than saying opinionated.
Yeah. I think basically there's what Colin Trevorrow wants to do and then everyone else who's wrong. And you kind of saw this a little bit with Jurassic World, because Jurassic World, again, made a lot of money, but there were things that people didn't like about it. There was some controversy before the movie came out regarding its treatment of female characters. There was some choices in the film that people didn't really care for. But at the end of the day, it was a success. I think that no one really quite knew what a good Jurassic Park sequel was going to be, so they let him do whatever he wanted, and chips fell where they may. So I think with Star Wars, especially for the concluding chapter in a trilogy, you're not getting a blank slate. You have to work with what's there. And I think the studio has a very clear vision of what they want that final chapter to look like.
They paid fucking a gajillion dollars for the last three installments.
Right.
They're not
going
to let you bend that, you know, that funnel in a different direction.
But I think they meant to at some point.
I think they wanted to bring new vision and creative insight into it. Whether they decided to pay them all the way through or not, it may have been easier just to give them a shit ton of money and say, get out of our faces, we'll find someone else. Yeah. Thanks for your input.
Yeah, because look at how it all worked, okay?
Look at Ron Howard now finishing the Han Solo one?
Han Solo.
Come on.
Go back to the basic. All the good people that Lobster listed earlier, except J.J. Abraham, they were mostly up-and-comers.
Yeah, they were all auteurs. They were all indie film directors. Rian Johnson had done Brick and Looper. Gareth Edwards had done Monsters and then did Godzilla.
Brick is so good. Damn it.
Yeah, it is.
So good.
Josh Trank had done Chronicle and then got Fantastic Four. Phil Lord and Chris Miller had done animation and then 21 Jump Street.
So I think Disney saw the investment they made, $4 billion, to buy Star Wars.
Yeah.
And then they were like, okay, can we really make Star Wars survive? And their ultimate plan was, okay, let's make the trilogy movies mostly Star Wars and make everything around it other stuff until we find what works. What happened is that when The Force Awakens came out,
they got
a $1 billion check. And I think that's that moment that everything changed, because 3 months
rich.
Yes, because 3 months later, they fired the guy from Chronicle, and then the Han Solo stuff started leaking out here and there. The Gareth Edwards stuff started to, they let him do that, but now they're bringing someone else to retool this. And all that happened kind of at the same time. And now you look at the list of new directors that we have. The only risky choice is Rian Johnson, and I think they're kind of stuck with it. They kind of like what he did, but you see the answer he gave to everybody when everyone thought he would be directing the next one. Yeah, it was like, no, I'm done. That's it.
Well, so I mean, with Marvel films too, right?
I guess for what it's worth, I think that they spent the money on the franchise, and they thought, well, George Lucas was a film student, and he directed this, so you know, maybe we could save a little bit of money and hire less experienced talent, but promising. But it's kind of like, well, okay, but they're not really tested on the big budget experience. Now, again, Colin Trevorrow had done Jurassic World, which was a big budget film, and it did well. But then he did Book of Henry, which flopped. And that was kind of the straw, I think, that said, well, let's see how his new movie performs. If it does well and he keeps his head above water, we'll keep him. If not, then we could say it's time to part ways.
Yeah, the funny thing in all that, the other thing I think that all these story gives is, it takes Kathleen Kennedy. It put Kathleen Kennedy in a tight spot, because as the producer and the head of Lucasfilm, her main job is to find people to put in place to create the product she's expecting to please the investor. That's her job. Right now, she's sucking at it, and I'm wondering if it's not Bob Iger that went over her head to get J.J. Abrams saying, I need this. Because when he finished 7, he seems to be like, okay, here's the what I'm going to say to the public. Oh, I wish I had directed 8. But he didn't do anything since. The guy was clearly tired and needed a break.
But as a manager, assistant manager, whatever, in life, you got to let them do their thing.
Yeah.
You know, the higher-ups have to let the manager, quote-unquote, if you will, do their shit. If they don't, or even if you take it the other way, the minions, sometimes there's interpersonal conflict between the minions, and you have to let it roll through. Like, this doesn't... They get squirrely all the time. They saw a vision in these people, and they always pull the trigger on letting them go, or firing them, or...
Well, again, Marvel has done it, too. They've had big names attached to their product, their projects, and then can them. We had Edgar Wright attached to direct a film. We had Ava DuVernay in talks to direct a film, and they've said, you know what, maybe not.
Okay, wait, back up. Okay, yeah, what you say is true, but that's two completely different stories. Ava DuVernay was never hired. She never worked on the movie.
No. Said, that's not the movie I want to do. She was
That's not the movie I want to do. That's Kevin Feige's job, which is the same job as Kathleen Kennedy. And so he didn't hire her.
And the other one, which is now you have Kevin Feige and Kathleen Kennedy as literally two of the most powerful producers working in Hollywood right now, because they have dispensed on multiple occasions with A-list talent that didn't play well.
Yeah, but the other thing that you were talking about is the Ant-Man production.
Well, right. I mean,
let's be honest. When they started developing, moment they released, it was a different movie.
Yeah, it was a different universe that they were playing in. But again, it's interesting to think about these studios are now not afraid to jettison talent, and it really kind of. We were kind of moving in Hollywood recently towards a more director-centric environment. We're moving now back towards Hollywood of the early 20th century, the producer-centric environment.
I'm going to say an opinion that's not popular, but we're going back to... Yeah, I know. We're going back to movie drama. In the 40s, you were watching that 15-minute thing at the start of the movie, and then you were going back the next week to get the follow-up to that 15 minutes. I'm sorry, we're, 20 installments to Marvel? Into Star Wars?
For all of our hope, though, this last weekend proved it. There's maybe 33 to 35 million in other box office in the top 10, and one of them has 123 million.
Yeah.
You're talking under 4 times as much. It is not a new thing. Yeah. It is a reboot, but it's a completely different retelling.
But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm going back to what he was talking about, the fact that it's more the centralization is going around Hollywood. Because Kevin Feige and Kathleen Kennedy are basically in charge of the tone of their universe, anymore. So... That's why you get Game of Thrones people to direct their stuff now. That's why DC has problems, they're paying Patty Jenkins a buttload of money because they're like, we need her.
So
we need
her.
They're paying her a buttload, but they're paying her like what's his face money? You know, Zack Snyder money.
I don't know what that means. Is that good or bad?
No.
I mean, Wing's saying it's a buttload, but basically it's the same as what Zack Snyder made.
Zack Snyder made $4.2 million. She's making $9 million up front, and she has a big chunk of the profit if the movie does.
Good. She deserves it.
She deserves everything and then some.
Yeah, she has the possibility if Wonder Woman makes the same amount of money made for this one to make more money than Christopher Nolan, which is the highest grossing director in the world.
She deserves every fucking cent.
I agree.
I will go see the next one 12 times just to pay her.
But that's why I like. I'm gonna champion a little bit the DC universe. Okay, they release a couple of duds, but at least they're trying stuff, different stuff. I'm not getting this mech Marvel or this mech Star Wars.
Yeah, but you know what? They're trying to fall into their same... It's different, but they're trying to fall into their same branding of the same shit. It's the darker, more gritty universe. They just happened to let one or two sneak through the cracks that were actually good in the Wonder Woman.
Yeah, I have to give Marvel the props for Guardians of the Galaxy. They,
you get more comedy with Guardians of the Galaxy. You get more Marvel. You get less like brooding. Everybody's going to die all the time. Even if everybody's going to die, it's like...
Well, my
I think what's interesting is multiple polls have come out saying, like, what's the most anticipated film of the fall? And it's Thor Ragnarok, not Justice League.
Oh, my God.
Justice League needs to pump up the publicity right now because Thor Ragnarok is doing it very well.
I had no interest in seeing that until about 2 months ago when I finally broke down and watched some flavor of clip. And then I was like, well, this could be fun. You're telling me Thor and Hulk are going to bum around?
Looks great. All right, so we talked a lot about Star Wars. What does this mean for when we actually get to see the movie? Because let's be honest, you don't care who directs the damn thing. You just want to go see it. Turns out we'll have to wait until December 2019. They originally said that they were going to shoot, they're going to release for May, and now they're going to push it back to December, like the other films. I think that's smart.
When is 8 coming out?
8 is coming out this December, but Han Solo is coming out in May. Like, supposedly. right after. But I think that's going to be pushed to December, too. They should stop trying to get May. They're doing really well around Christmas.
Even Rogue One did fine.
Everybody is off, and everybody has expendable money around Christmas.
Hey, it's Star Wars Christmas. I love it. It's a yearly tradition now.
Here's my thing. Movies that come out around the holidays get multiple viewings. Because why? One, you get out of school. You finish the semester. You want to relax. You go see it. You go see it with your friends. You go see it by yourself. Fine. Over the holiday break, you're stuck at home with your family. Everyone wants to get out of the house. What do? You go to the movies. When it's January.
What do you do? You go to a place. You don't talk to your family.
Right. Exactly. You don't have to talk. You don't have to see them. You sit in the dark. It's fine. What do you do in January when there's shit in the movie theaters? You go see that same movie again. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, this is why Avatar and Titanic, the two biggest grossing movies of all time, both came out in December.
Yes, because of the replay value. But the interesting thing is now, Star Wars releasing a week after Wonder Woman 2. And then Wonder Woman's going to go, I say, March.
I mean, it's fine. Wonder Woman did fine in July. I don't see why they need December. But
December was available.
Yeah, not anymore.
Yeah, I even think that Han Solo movie is going to be pushed because they're still shooting right now. It's supposed to be out in 8 months, 9 months. I don't believe that.
It'll be lo-fi, not many effects.
Yeah, it's a Star Wars movie.
Cardboard cutouts flying in front of shit. No,
so that's called the Orville.
Oh, I have that recorded. Oh, that's on the cast.
Yeah, don't watch it.
It's made to be crappy, dude. It's not made to be great. It's made to be funny and fun, not...
I liked it. Wing didn't like it because...
I wanted it to be funny and fun, and it was kind of serious. The tiebreaker.
It was kind of too much like Star Trek, right?
Yeah. Really?
Here's what I think people are going to complain. People are going to complain that the Orville is too much like Star Trek. And they're going to complain that Star Trek Discovery is not enough like Star Trek.
Oh, that would work for them, though.
I wanted Galaxy Quest and that thing.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted.
Apparently they're making another movie, or they want to.
Without Alan Rickman?
Amazon series, I think they had at one point.
You're right, you're right. I don't know, something. But you're right. I'm sorry, Wing. You're... Rest in peace.
All right, killers.
So, next week, Legends Podcast, Batman and Bill.
Ooh, a documentary. Like a documentary.
All right, well, hey, this has been episode 339 of Legends Podcast. I'm Beef saying, stay safe, our Texas and Floridian area type friends.
I'm John D. saying, I'm going to go see it.
I'm Lobster saying... And this is not a comment on either one. You'll float too.
Oh, dear. You went there. We're going to hell.
I think he was talking about he eats a lot of fiber.
That's true.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next week. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to leave us feedback, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Legends Podcast. For all our contact information, as well as other shows, look to GunnaGeek.com and KrakenCast.com. You can also visit LegendsPodcast.Lipson.com, where you'll find our complete archives. The music heard on this podcast is Danger Storm by Kevin MacLeod and can be found at Incomputech.com. The opinions heard on this podcast are those of each individual host and do not represent Legend Stream Canada, Gunna Geek, or KrakenCast. No infringement is intended.
I always have something for Michael G. Fox.
Yeah, I have something for him too. But it's not the cure for Parkinson's.
Oh, unfortunately.
You're an asshole.
Just kidding.
I'm glad I'm recording.
We didn't give him Parkinson's. I mean, come on.
I like that you giggle snorted at the prospect of me putting that on the outro or something.
Worth it.